I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Hark Herold. He is a retired U.S. Air Force colonel and a professional EOS implementer. He helps entrepreneurial leadership teams gain clarity, traction, and results. He brings over 30 years of combined military and business leadership experience. He empowers organizations to grow strategically and operate with discipline, vision, and purpose. Hark, welcome.
Thanks, Craig. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. So it's always good to have a veteran on, you know, and I was guesting years ago, I was guesting on a podcast run by another vet. And it was funny. He said it was a live show. And he told me after we were done, he was like, you know, he said, there were people messaging me in the chat if you all knew each other. And he was like, no, we just met. But, you know, it's a neat community that.
Absolutely.
I was in during mostly peaceful times. You know, we had the first Gulf War when I was in, but I was deployed to Japan and they decided to keep us over there to keep North Korea in check. But you got in some dust up somewhere.
Yeah, so I was also in, I was commissioned in 1989 and went over to Saudi for Desert Shield, Desert Storm. And that was cool as a second lieutenant. That was very a unique experience to be able to see all of that. And we were at a air refueling wing base in Saudi where on the night the air war kicked off, we had 99 air refueling jets on the ground getting ready to go out on missions, which was just incredible.
Quick question. How long before the strikes did you know when the strikes were happening?
That day. I mean, when we did the mission brief for the flights. Hey, it's a go. Okay, bring everybody in, do all the mission briefs. You get all the air crews in the theater and the intel and being and all the flight routes and all the deconfliction. And yeah, so I mean, it's been planned forever, right? I mean, not forever, but you know, been planning towards it. But then the go was, okay, you know, tomorrow's the day or the night in that case.
Yeah, because I remember a lot of night missions. We were using our, you know, taking every advantage we had and flying at night.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I see the TV shows and I have people, you know, the TV shows are like, hey, I've got clearance. You can read me in. And people ask me about that. I'm like, yeah, it's not how it works.
No, need to know is the key criteria. Do you need to know?
Well, and there's, you know, I think there's an application for civilian life. You know, people love gossip and there'll be times where I'll stop somebody. I'm like, whoa. I don't want to know this because I don't want to be responsible for this information.
Yeah. Well, and in the classified world, a lot of things are classified because we know we are going to do that. If you didn't read it from a classified source that said, in the event of this happening, this is what we're going to do. If you just guessed, you made a logical assumption that, hey, if this happens, we're going to do this. That's not classified. Once you know for sure, because you've read the plans, because one of my things was as a plans officer, now you can't talk about it because now it's classified because you know it's classified.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just kind of a burden. I mean, I remember when I got out, I did some active mental exercises to try to actively forget the things I knew, because I just don't want to be responsible for slipping.
But
Now
yeah.
the crazy thing was I could go to the library, pull out a Jane's, and things that if I said them, I go to jail, they're just sit there printed in Jane's. Yeah. So what were you doing? What was your role in the Air Force?
So I couldn't keep a career field. So I switched around, which is not a normal career. Normally you have a specialty and you quote unquote grow up in that specialty, whether it's intel or, for pilots, or whether it's cyber or IT or whatever. You kind of stay in that career field, your career path while you're in. I switched. I did ran a 24/7 command center. I did some exec work. I did assignments. I was in comm before it was cyber. Then I was in cyber. My deployed command was civil engineering, 6.5 years at the Pentagon. So I people are like, hey, I want to have a successful career. And I'm like, don't do what I did, because that's unusual to bounce around like that and be able to have a
Did
successful
you make
career.
06?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you did all right.
Yeah, I did, but I wouldn't recommend. That's not, if somebody's, I would not recommend they go that path.
Yeah. Now, at one point you mentioned that you were responsible for base recovery.
Yeah, so my deployed command was Civil Engineer Squadron. So for those who don't know, a Civil Engineer Squadron is kind of like a Department of Public Works. We have plumbers, carpenters, HVAC, heavy equipment operators, but we also have firefighters and explosive ordnance disposal in the Civil Engineer Squadron in the Air Force. And so when I was deployed to Iraq for Operation Iraqi Freedom, in 06 and in 08, as the civil engineer commander, I am accountable for getting the base up and running after a rocket attack. So we would have rocket attacks on the base, it would shut everything down. My job as the civil engineer squadron commander was to send out our explosive ordnance disposal folks, the firefighter folks as necessary, and whoever else to make sure that the base was safe, and we were an F-16 divert base, so we had to make sure the runway was able to be used. It hadn't been damaged in the attack. And then any unexploded ordnance had been saved. So anyway, so yeah, so I'm accountable for getting the base up and running, making sure my folks have everything they need so that they can make it safe and we can resume operations.
So, in terms of the incoming, how often do the bombs not go boom?
Well, where we were in northern Iraq, they were using makeshift and leftover stuff. It wasn't high quality off the shelf munitions that they were shooting. It was whatever they could get. So it was not unusual for, if there was a rocket attack on the base, for there to it not to go off. It wasn't a rare occurrence. Most of the time they did, but sometimes they didn't. In which case, now you have unexploded ordnance that can go off at any time.
Yeah. What'd you find challenging in that role?
Well, so like we had an occasion where we had a rocket attack, and it took what felt like a really long time for my folks to do what they needed to do, because they had to go out and do a grid search to find the unexploded ordnance. It's at night, of course, right? So it's at night, they're out doing a grid search because you don't just want to drive willy-nilly out there where you think it landed. And so it's just a laborious, slow process. And all of that time, the base is shut down. And so everybody else wants to get moving and they want to resume activities. But our rules of engagement at the time were that everybody was locked down until we had it completely safed. And so, we got the feedback that we needed to change that. So, got my EOD folks, my firefighter folks, and some of the other key people on the team together. and got their inputs. We brainstormed, how do we reduce this time? What can we do? And so we then, came up with they came up with some different options on how we could do that, right? So got their inputs, let them see it, and then made a decision on, okay, these are the steps we're going to take going forward to reduce the time that the base is closed, basically. And because they were all involved in the decision making, the key people, even if we didn't do what they had wanted, they'd seen it, they understood it, and so then we were able to go out and implement these new procedures to get the base up and running more quickly.
Yeah. And where were you? What bases were you that you had incoming like that?
Kirkuk, Iraq. It's in
Wow.
northern Iraq.
Wow. So when did you get out of the Air Force?
So I retired in September of 2017.
Oh, wow. So it's been a few years.
Yeah, so I was at the Pentagon. I'd been there for a while and was able to get my last assignment at the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs to help set up the Air Force's Cyber Innovation Center there. So that was my last assignment. And so that's when we came to Colorado, and that's where I've stayed.
Yeah. And did you jump straight in EOS after that?
No, so when I left the military, I didn't want to go work for Raytheon or Lockheed or whoever, even though I had my appropriate, I was eligible for top secret SCI, and I mean all those things that they like. And I was coming out of a cyber AFSC, but I didn't want to go do that. I had done some corporate stuff previously and wanted to work with small businesses. So I started in the Denver area running an incubator for veteran and military spouse-owned businesses. And so was helping to run that incubator, and then just got further and further involved with veteran and military spouse-owned businesses.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you told me was you're not interested in any business outside the Denver area unless it's a veteran.
Well, I'm interested. I'm willing to help people, but from a client perspective, yeah, I'm at the point where I don't really want to travel a lot. I've done that previously. And so I'm looking for my client base to be pretty much along the front range, but I make exceptions for veteran-owned or veteran-affiliated businesses. Two of my clients are veteran. So one is the Pat Tillman Foundation as a client.
Yep.
And another one is the National Veteran-Owned Business Association, which certifies businesses as being veteran-owned for the private sector. And so those are two of my travel clients. Otherwise, I pretty much confine myself along the front range.
Well, I think it just struck me that obviously you have a lot of kinship and affection for veterans, that would be your one exception.
And so that's what I'm willing to do. But if you have listeners who are not in, that area, what I do as an EOS implementer, and we'll talk a little bit, but there's 800 around the globe. So if you're interested in what we talk about when we talk about that aspect, I can connect you with local resources.
Yeah, and when did you eventually get involved in EOS?
Yeah, so I was volunteering running that incubator for veteran military spouse-owned businesses. A national nonprofit called Bunker Labs was doing other things, helping veteran and military spouse-owned businesses. And so they knew what we were doing in Denver. They came in and said, hey, we want to replicate this in other cities, to make this somewhat long story a little bit shorter. So they ended up getting me because I was already doing it here in Denver. And then I ended up being recruited to join the staff and ended up as the president and COO for Bunker Labs, the national organization. Bunker was running on EOS. So that was my introduction to EOS, was I joined an organization that was already using that system to operate.
And what is EOS?
Yeah, so EOS, it's the entrepreneurial operating system. So it's a way to operate your business. It's not a computer system. Every business has an operating system. It's just the way you operate. It's the way you talk about your vision and decide on your strategic planning. It's the way you get, make sure you have the right people and how you treat people and work with people. It's how you treat data. It's how you resolve your issues. It's about your processes and then how you execute. Everybody has an, if they have a business, they have a way they do those things. They probably are hodgepodge and they're doing a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And they like this and they came in. And so it's not a system that's reinforcing that works within itself. And they probably don't even have a name for it. It's just how we do stuff. And so Gino Wickman, who wrote the book Traction and created the EOS system, took these different bits and pieces, put them together into a holistic system that is reinforcing the different components work together. And so that's what EOS is. It's a way to run your business.
What's that look like? You know, so if I'm a business owner, I mean, it sounds interesting, but what does it look like when for me to use EOS?
So when I work with a leadership team to help them implement EOS, okay, it's designed to do three things for the company. Number one is to get the leadership team aligned on three things we call vision, traction, and healthy. Vision is about getting the leadership team aligned on where they're going and how they're going to get there. Traction is about putting systems and processes in place to execute against all aspects of that vision. And healthy is about making the leadership team a more functioning, cohesive team, because sometimes leaders are not good team members. Then ultimately, as goes the leadership team, so goes the rest of the organization. So we get everybody in the organization aligned on the vision. We put those systems and processes in place so wherever they go throughout the organization, people are executing with discipline and accountability against that vision. They're gaining traction and advancing as a functioning, cohesive team.
Yeah. You know, I wonder how many people, when you're talking to people, how many times do you run in where somebody's like, no, I should be able to figure this out on my own? Or, you know, and it's not necessarily ego driven, but
it's pretty much ego driven.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, it's, everything's in this book, Traction. I mean, it's in this book. And so if you're interested, go out and read the dang book. It's not, you know, magic pills. The challenge is reading the book is like having the gym, right? It's there. Just go use it. Go work out. Okay. Nothing wrong with that. That's better than doing nothing. But do you want a coach to help you? Do you want a personal trainer? That's where I come in. I'm like that coach or that personal trainer at the gym. Or you can use like a sports team analogy, right? If you have two teams that are playing in the World Series, one has a coach, one doesn't have a coach, which one do you want to bet on?
Yeah.
So it's, we call it self-implementing. If you read the book and you do it yourself, self-implementing is better than nothing. And that's typically really good for the smaller companies. But when you get to a point where you realize there's a lot more that you could get from the system, you just don't know how to really get it implemented. And then a lot of times entrepreneurs honestly don't have the discipline to really do it. They need somebody to hold them accountable. So it's not just holding their team accountable, it's holding that owner, that visionary, that founder accountable. And they just need that. And that's when it really takes off.
Yeah. Well, when you talk about coaches, you know, one of my sayings, I tell people, I said, you know, Michael Jordan didn't have a single coach. He had a team of coaches.
Yeah.
You know, so if somebody with the talent of Michael Jordan sees the value in multiple coaches, it shouldn't be a threat to anybody to have a coach come in for their business.
Exactly. It's all about somebody who, this is what I do. I'm a professional in being an EOS implementer and EOS coach.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I'm not distracted by other things. I'm not also trying to run this other business. I'm not like, this is what I do. I'm a dedicated coach working with the leadership team of small to medium-sized businesses to help them succeed. It's not about me. I don't care if you're an HVAC company, a construction company, if you do stuff in space, whatever you do, I want to help you get what you want out of the business.
Well, I'll be going to something called Camp Gladiator this evening, which is kind of an outdoor high intensity workout. And it's amazing. I've trained with a series of different coaches, and the coach I'll be training with this evening, really has been transformative. And it's kind of back to what you're saying. I mean, I show up with a couple hand weights and a workout mat, and we do different things and we go for a run. I can do 100% of those things in my cul-de-sac right here.
Right.
But my wife says I'm in the best shape she's ever seen me. And I'm doing that, by the way, with a screwed up lung from COVID.
Yeah, well, and we talked about the coach, right? And you talked about different coaches that you've had. It's in EOS, there's, like I said, there's 800 implementers around the globe, okay? And the implementer needs to click with the leadership team. Especially the founder or the visionary, as we call it, but they've got to click. And sometimes the system is the right system, but they need to find the right coach,
Yeah.
right? Because there's different personalities, there's different, we all do the same thing. It's like different personal trainers, right? Like they all are doing, but it's different how they do it, what they do, how they emphasize what they've seen. So yeah, so it's like that in the EOS world too, is and that's why it's like we have an abundance mindset amongst the people who do this. It's like, listen, if EOS is right for you and I'm not right for you, I know somebody who can help.
Yeah. So one of the things I've heard in EOS is right seat on the bus, right bus. Did I get that right?
Yeah. So we do various exercises, right, through as we go along the journey. But one of the first things we do is establish what is the vision for the organization. We do that with the leadership team. Where are we going and how are we going to get there? So that we help the leadership team to figure that out. And we liken that to that's like the placard on the front of the bus that says, this is where we're going. Whatever comes in that, this is where we're going. If you want to go where we're going, hop on. But we're not an Uber. If you want to go over here, don't get on this bus because this is where we're going. And then we get to the Jim Collins aspect of, from good to great of right people in the right seats on that bus. So first we define where the bus is going, where the organization is going. Then we work to get the right people on the bus and then make sure they're in the right seats to help drive the organization to the next level.
Yeah. What barriers do you see from that keep people from achieving? Folks are on the right bus and they're in the right seat on the bus.
Yeah, so some of it is because work with growing organizations. And so some of it is, hey, listen, we've had Jim has been with the organization. He started out doing our books and then he moved up in the organization and now he's the chief financial officer. But he's really not a chief financial officer. He's not there. He doesn't bring what the organization needs to get to the next level. And people are justifiably they love him, but it's hard to sometimes what's the best for the organization overall. So sometimes you got to make hard decisions on what's right for the other 42 people in the organization, right? So holding on, delaying and making people decisions is one of the things that holds people back.
Yeah. Well, I know from me and my career, there was one time I held on to somebody way too long. And the biggest indication was when I fired him, his colleagues came up to me and thanked me.
Yes, we call it that. The 36 hours of pain is the it's hard, and it should be hard. You're dealing with people, and
Yeah.
making those kinds of decisions with people should not be done lightly. It's hard, but that 36 hours of pain then gets you past that. And to your point, everybody else, all the other team members, go, what took you so long?
Yep. Yep. Let's switch as let's
Yeah.
switch and talk about vets. You told me something. You said there's a lot of resources for vets. And I'll be honest, I mean, obviously I'm a vet. I spent 6 years in the Marines, and if there are resources, I don't know about it. I feel like I'm going it alone.
Yes, and that's the challenge, right? So the resources are there, but it doesn't do any good if people don't know about them.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I do, and Craig, I can share a list with you, is I've compiled over the years just different resources. And again, the veterans I work with are, I'm specifically talking about business owners. So it's for entrepreneurs and business owners. There's other organizations that have lots of resources for veterans who are in different, have a different things they're dealing with, right? I'm talking about for business owners. So there's organizations such as Patriot Boot Camp, which is now affiliated with the Disabled American Veterans, and they run boot like a 2-day boot camp for veterans who own businesses, small veterans, small businesses, right? Like they're just kind of starting, and they it do expose them to all sorts of resources. The National Veteran-Owned Business Association that I mentioned earlier, if you have physical products, they certify these businesses as being veteran-owned, and then have a marketplace where they connect them to like Fortune 500 companies who are looking for veteran-owned businesses in their supply chain. There is Bunker Labs, which I was affiliated with, which is now with the Institute of Veteran and Military Families out of Syracuse. They have programming wherever people are on their entrepreneurial journey, whether it's they're in the ideation stage, like I'm thinking about it, they have an MVP or a minimum viable product. Or if they're multi-million dollar businesses, we have different programming at different levels, all designed at like no cost to help veteran and military spouse business owners. So, and those are just the ones off the top of my head, but there are a lot of them out there.
Wow. Well, this has been awesome. Park, if somebody wanted to reach you and if somebody wanted to figure out where to get these veteran resources, how do they reach you?
Yeah, so you can go to my website is probably the easiest to start with. It's Hark, EOS, HARKEOS.com. That'll get you to my web page, and there's all my contact information. That's probably the easiest and fastest and most efficient way to connect.
That's awesome. Well, hey, thanks for sharing that on Leaders and Legacies.
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity, Craig. Good talking with you.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.